Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop here in the studio. And we're going to have Frank Leboeuf and Kieran Gibbs joining us as well, the former Arsenal defender. And just in case you forgot, Arsenal are still title favourites. It has been an international week. We're getting back to domestic football. It is a significant favourite with the bookies as well. 8 points leading at the top of the table. Next up for Arteta's men, Leeds at home on Saturday. Let's get into it then, shall we? Starting off with Kieran, who used to play for the team. Last year, they missed out on the top four, Kieran. Nobody would have ever been talking about them at that point as even being in the title race, let alone title favourites with the bookies. How have they done this?
To be honest, I think they'll be a little bit surprised. I mean, I've touched on it before, but they've just shown all of the signs of a top team and a championship winning team. I think the two biggest things for me that has been different would be they've kept most of the squad fit. They kept the key players fit. And then I think second, they've just responded so well after, you know, a few negative results. They lost to United and they bounced back. They lost to City. They bounced back straight away. I think the biggest difference is that because, you know, probably been guilty over the years of, you know, letting a bad result drag out for a few weeks and two or three games as opposed to just a one. But they're having an outstanding season, there's no doubt about that.
Kieran, there's been a lot of talk this week here on this panel about Player of the Year. Many of our panellists are going for Erling Haaland, but just a couple have strayed away and gone for Arsenal players. One of them's gone for Odegaard, one of them's gone for Bukayo Saka. Is there an Arsenal player that stands out for you for this season if it was to be talked about for Player of the Year?
It has to be Martin for me. If there was anyone in the squad, even though it's really hard because everyone's chipped in at different stages of the season. So I'm gonna say Martin because he's just been instrumental and he's just so easy on the eye. His numbers have been incredible this season. Everything goes through him. Such a gifted player technically. I would have to say him.
And it's a perfect introduction to being on with Frank Leboeuf, Kieran, because he's been making funny faces while we're talking about Player of the Year there. So, Frank, why was that?
Oh, no, because I can share Kieran's preferences, but I will go for Saliba because really what I see from him from the first day to now, until now, it's absolutely fantastic. He's still a very young player as well. Of course, he's not on the offensive line, so maybe we see him less. But the way he conducts the defense and the way that he plays, how he anticipates the game, for me, makes him the most influential player for the Gunners this season. I think he stabilized the defense. He's the first to serve the player in the midfield of the park properly to create an action. So Saliba has to get lots of credit to Arsenal's results.
Kieran, just talking as well about this same group of players. The mentality change that we've seen in Arsenal under Mikel Arteta, how has that come about?
I mean, we've spoken about Mikel a lot. And, you know, as a player, when I played with him, you could see all of the potential that he had as a player and what he thought of the game. He just lived and breathed it. I honestly think that, you know, to be a player and then a manager at that level, you really have to be, like, obsessed with the game to a different level. I always joke, I feel like he loves the game that much. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, in bed at night, he's sleeping with a ball in between his legs and wakes up in the middle of the night and accidentally calls his Mrs. Odegaard because he's that obsessed. So he just lives and breathes it, and it's showing in his team's performances. He's managed to get everyone on board. What I love so much is that he rode out the early storm. He rode out that early storm when, you know, things weren't going so well, and the board stuck with him. And now they're reaping the rewards, and, you know, hopefully he'll be there for a long, long time. But he's really showing that he's a top manager.
It is such a different story, Shaka.
Well, there was so many questions. Yeah,
yeah. Hang on, be nice.
So many questions about what Kieran just said there. But thankfully, I have never been as obsessed as that.
I hope not, Shaq.
Thankfully. So, was that key?
Mikel Arteta, same coach as last year. Big difference this time around.
Yeah, listen, I think Arsenal learned a lot from the disappointments of last season. I always go back to that game at St. James's Park where it just felt like this, like Arsenal were going to crumble. And maybe that was more reflective of Newcastle and the mood that they were in at the time. But I thought that was a valuable learning experience for a very young squad. Now, a lot has changed in a very short time for Arsenal from that point to the start of the season. I think you have to look at the signings in the summer, Zinchenko, Gabriel Jesus in particular, who absolutely fantastic. Jesus gets injured, Nketiah comes in and just fills a void like you didn't think he could up to that point. Then he kind of goes off the boil, but Martinelli finds a little bit of form. Then he loses form, Trossard is signed, he comes in. Everything just worked so wonderfully well. And in the wider discussion around talking about player of the season, yeah, I think Odegaard has been the standout. But there are so many others, Bukayo Saka, who's played his part. And without their performances, I don't think we have any discussion about Arsenal. I've spoken about Jesus and Zinchenko. Thomas Partey avoided injuries for the most part. His leadership has been invaluable as well. So it really has been, for want of a better cliche, a team effort without that many standing out. But that's because so many of this squad have been that good.
And a team that, while everybody else around them has lacked consistency, that's exactly what you can say about Arsenal, that you have come to the point to where you expect them to play well, to get 3 points, to win matches, to do so consistently. You cannot say that about Liverpool. You cannot say that certainly about Chelsea. Early on in the season, there was a question about Manchester United as well. And Manchester City themselves haven't been nearly as consistent as they have been in years past. So they're taking advantage of what's going on around them in teams that are falling short of their own expectations. And they themselves are now shooting above their own expectations. And they're willing to then take their game to a different level that is, I think, pushed by that level of confidence that you get from winning consistently. And it just feeds, that's something that it feeds itself. When you get that confidence, now you feel like every time you show up on the field, on the stadium, you're going to win. You're going to win today, you're going to win tomorrow, you show up for training, and there is this feeling about a team that now it's meant for something greater than what they may have thought at the beginning of the season. That is a great place to be.
Kieran, we're just talking about the front line as well here. When Gabriel Jesus gets back to full 100% fitness, what happens? Does he get straight back into that starting 11?
Yeah, I think he's got to go straight back in. And I really like Trossard as well because he stepped up to the plate and their recruitment's been so good when they've needed it. And they stepped up in January and made signings. There's probably another difference to the last few years as well. But yeah, for me, he has to go in. He's a big game player. He scores big goals. He works hard for the team. And what I love about Arsenal is that even their best players are doing the most work, you know, from the front line. They're just relentless. And they, in most games this season, they've started with the early punch and gone ahead. And then it just feels like the game just runs away from the opposition. So for me, he has to come straight back in.
Who makes way then?
I would still go with the front three of Martinelli, Jesus, and Saka.
Agree?
I totally agree. And I think, again, not to downplay Jesus' role, particularly early in the season, and Arsenal being here, and while he's been out for quite some time, injured since he woke up, that start that Arsenal had, I think, is absolutely vital to their sort of self-confidence and how this team continues to put results together. And to Kieran's point, how they've been able to bounce back from disappointing results, because that is a sign of an outstanding team playing with confidence.
One thing that we'll be talking about now that club football is back is the top four race. Mm. And it seems as though our panel are changing their minds every week on which team are going to finish in the top four. But given that Liverpool are often the pick to secure it, we're going to take this excuse to speak about them, especially because Frank Leboeuf is here, and I want to talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, Frank has often been, Kieran, very critical of Trent's defending, so we're interested to know what you think about him.
I really like Trent, and I feel like it's easy to pick holes in players these days. But if you look at his numbers since, you know, over the last four or five seasons, he's been outstanding. Look, if you have to substitute a little bit of lapses in concentration sometimes for the quality that he has on the offensive, you know, you're going to have to take it for someone of that quality. How many assists has he got at such a young age? How many goals? Set piece specialist. He's still so young. Like, this is what people don't take into account a lot of the time. He's gonna grow and get more and more experience. He's already won everything. He's got a basis of good confidence as a player. And I think that we have to trust that side of his game is just going to develop as he gets older.
There you go, Frank. You've got to start trusting Trent Alexander-Arnold tomorrow, and everything's going to be okay.
Why don't you trust him, Frank?
Yeah, Frank.
Yeah, well, you know what? I find you a little bit harsh, my dear Kay, you know, about my comments about Trent Alexander-Arnold, because I always say that offensively, that guy is outstanding. And Karen just agreed with me. The guy is one of the best players, we know, on the right side in the world, you know, when he has to give a cross or a ball in the space, in numbers of assists that he already proven that he's capable of. And I have no problem whatsoever to say that he's one of the best players offensively. But everybody is okay and can agree with me that he has a lack of concentration at some point defensively. And before, he was helped by central backs, by maybe in the middle of the park by Ederson, and he's not anymore. So everything is seen now. In a way that we can see that he doesn't know how to cover his teammates, how to attack or see it is back. And that's obvious that he has a lack of experience in that matter. But overall, he's a fantastic player. You don't play for Liverpool not being a fantastic player. That's stupid.
Just a reminder to Kieran that now, in working with us, he's now on the dark side, right? He's come to this side of the world. And by definition, our job is to pick holes on people's games. It's what we do every day, Kieran. So if you're going to dance with us, you're going to have to be willing to do
it. Be ready, my man.
Don't listen to them, Kieran. Keep up the positivity, okay? Yeah. We need some of that.
I'm just that guy. I'm that guy, you know?
Oh, you will change. You will change. I was that guy, too, before. You don't work with Craig Burley yet. When you will work with Craig Burley, you will start changing, my man.
That'll suck the life out of you. That's different.
Yeah, you might not want to come back and join us then. We want to move on to talk about another article that's actually gone up on the ESPN website from Rob Dawson, talking about sources telling ESPN that Harry Maguire can, on occasion, focus too much on social media criticism, despite being advised to stay off Twitter in the immediate aftermath of matches. This is a report that's up on ESPN.com. Kieran is definitely the youngest person on this panel today, and I'd say by quite some way as well. So probably the only player who's played in the social media era, Ale for a few years, maybe, but definitely wasn't on Twitter. Okay,
that seemed like a backhanded compliment, somewhat dismissive.
Listen, I want to talk about this whole situation then, Kieran, because you can give us some insight that these guys can't on this topic. Why players are on social media? Is it so hard to avoid seeing things like this? Is it impossible to ignore it? Just some insight on that side of things as a player.
Look, I think it's impossible to ignore it completely. It's you know, it's taken over the world now. We can't live without phones and internet and whatnot. I think if that's the case for Harry, then to be honest, I think it's just sad, because probably when he looks back, you know, on his career, when it's done, he'll probably wish that he never listened to any of that and just enjoyed himself more in the short career that players have. And he'll wish that he just focused on, you know, his overall development, not just as a professional, but just as a man. And just touching on that, I think what's even sadder is that just we're in a world now where there's a lot of people that are just craving attention online, and it's a real thing. And people actually, you know, make money off of clickbait and algorithms and views and likes and whatnot. And it's so much to the point that it's actually probably not about him really anymore. It's just he will become, you know, a content commodity for people online. But I just hope that more than anything, he's proud of what he's already done in his life. You know, he's something that millions will try but not achieve. Of course, it's easier said than done. But, you know, we're all human and we all want to be respected for, you know, being good at what we do. And it shows that, if anything, he cares about his craft. But I think it's just a lot of it's just so harsh. You know, you've been to 2 World Cups. You play for one of the biggest clubs in the world and you're not a good player is just pretty wild to me. And it kind of sums up, you know, where we're at as a society, just a little bit.
It's tough, isn't it? Because everyone's on there these days and you're expected to be part of your brand and who you are. But we do often see over this side of the world, NFL players at the beginning of a season saying, that's it. You're not going to hear from me on social media during the season. I'll see you guys at the end of the season. Do you think that would be an answer for some of these players who get affected like this by it?
Absolutely. See, while I understand that this is part of our reality and it's hard to turn your back on it, you can turn your phone off, you know, right? You don't have to log into your Twitter account. You don't have to be looking at Instagram all the time. You don't have to do that. It takes an actual conscious decision to say, I'm going in. And if you're going in, then you're going to have to be willing to live with what you see, the good and the bad. And nowadays, people have more fun with the bad than they do with the good. The truth of the matter is that online abuse is not just specific to soccer players. This goes on with just about everybody on society. But if you are on a platform that is going to elevate you and then it's going to break you down, what do you gain? What do you gain by participating? So there's no reason for me, for a guy like Harry Maguire, if he knows full well that this is part of his reality and that the criticism is going to come, there's no reason for him to be part of any of this social media. No reason whatsoever. He gains absolutely nothing from it, and it actually takes away from him, from his game, from his sense of self-worth, from his confidence, from whatever it may be. And guess what? We're seeing it on the field. So it affects his career. And if that's the case, turn your phone off. Don't go into social media. Don't do it. You're not going to gain anything from it. And people that tell you that they support you, that they love you, it's going to be a minority compared to all the people that are going to come out with some of the most ridiculous messages, full of hate, full of criticism, people that do not know you. They don't know what your background is. They don't know what you're all about. And they seem to think that they know you. They don't know you, and yet they criticize you. So there's nothing to gain, Harry. Turn the phone off. Don't go on social media, and you're not going to be criticized.
I suppose, like when you guys were playing, Frank, it was player ratings that you'd see in the newspaper, articles that you'd read from certain journalists where you'd see that type of criticism. How was it back then to try and switch it off and not let it get to you?
It's hard because it hurt me at some point. That I've decided to not buy any newspapers and not look anywhere, you know, on TV, for example. Because at the end of the day, I realized very quickly that I knew deeply inside myself whether I was good or not, and whether I could watch TV or not to see my mistakes or my good goals or my good tackles, whatever it could be. And you have to force yourself at first, you know, to say, okay, I'm not watching it, I'm not reading it. And after that, you have a good life. Because as Ali said, you always have a friend of yours who's going to say, oh, you know what, I read something yesterday. Well, the guy smashed you in the face, you know. The journalist doesn't like you for sure. You don't read that article. So you want to see. You want to read it because you want to know. Because everybody is curious. But it's better to not doing it. And I have something to say about Harry Maguire. He's not the only one. I talked, and it was like 5-6 years ago, I talked to a big coach, and I'm not going to name him. He said, it's almost impossible to talk to the players the 10 minutes after the final whistle, when they come back to the dressing room. The first thing they do, they go to their cells, and they check. They check what people I've seen of them and what they think about them. That's crazy. That's crazy. But that's the world we're living in. And I think there is nothing else to do but, you know, trying to help them, you know, not doing it.
Is Frank right, Kieran? Is that the players will be taking their phones out straight after a game in the changing room?
Probably. It's not really something that I've seen. But Frank's right as well. Like, I've been guilty of, you know, way before... when I was a young player and checking newspapers and seeing, I remember seeing one time that we played away somewhere in the Champions League, and I thought, oh wow, like I was excited to wake up in the morning. We'd won the game, had a couple of assists, and I read two newspapers, and in one newspaper I was star man, and then in another newspaper I was lowest rating on the pitch. And then you realize, I think that was the penny dropped for me at that point, where I was like, well, football really is just about opinion. And I think Harry will know if he's in good form or not. You know, he's got coaches that are going to give him stats. He's going to analyze his game. Like, he's going to know deep down. And I just hope that he realizes that is the most important opinion, you know?
Yeah, let's move on then to talk about the 2023 Hall of Fame. The Premier League has revealed its shortlist. And just to let you know, there are already Hall of Fame members inducted there. Okay. Because many people are saying, well, where's this person's name? These are the names that we can already see that are in there. Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger are also going to be the first managers to be inducted this year as well. Anyway, for this year, from the shortlist, we asked you guys, and we all got involved actually, to pick the three that we think should go in. And these are the three.
Frank goes with three centre-backs.
Of course.
All right.
Doc, Frank. Kieran, let's start with you. Then you've gone for Michael Owen, Nemanja Vidic and Andrew Cole. Tell us how you picked your three.
I just love Michael. I just love Michael, guys. I've been a big fan of his since I was a little kid. That was more of a from-the-heart decision, to be honest. Just an icon, a true icon in my eyes. Ballon d'Or winner, man. Ballon d'Or winner, 150, what, one of 10 players to have 150 goals in the Premier League. He was a Liverpool legend, probably a bit of a sour one for Liverpool fans that he won his only Premier League for United, but I chose Michael.
Frank, what have you got against Andrew Cole?
I don't have anything against Andrew Cole. Can I have something for the others? You know, that's it, you know. And for my union, the centre-backs, you know. And the three names are definitely people who deserve to be there. Tony Adams is a legend, captain of England. John Terry is the same. And Nemanja Vidic, I didn't have the chance to play against him or to see him playing, but I saw him on TV. The guy was just a monster. So I think it's only fair sometimes, because we know that we only give awards to forward players, to give some credit to my union and to the very good centre-backs that I've had the chance to, for some of them, play against or play with.
Yeah, Kieran didn't use that excuse, which is why we'll be happy to have Kieran Gibbs back.
You realise, though, that Frank, he's at least been consistent, because when we talked about Arsenal's best player, he did say Saliba.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're just going to be naming center backs for the rest of time with Frank Leboeuf in this show.
Yeah.
Consistency, the key to Frank's
maybe,
game.
Maybe.
Kieran, thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to speaking to you again here on ESPN FC.
Guys, thank you very much. Pleasure.
And Kieran, be a little bit more negative, please, next time.
I'll get my notepad out next time.
He's got a loving heart. He's got a loving heart in him.
Definitely consistent with his negativity, Frank Leboeuf. Just a look at the Premier League schedule this weekend and what is coming back. Arsenal against Leeds United, as mentioned, plenty of games to be looking out for, including Newcastle against Manchester United on Sunday as well. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. L'Équipe has published the top salaries of Ligue 1 players, and probably no surprise, but the top 10 spots are occupied entirely by PSG players. The publication is reporting that Kylian Mbappe's monthly salary is almost double that of his teammates Neymar and Messi, 6 million euros a month for the Frenchman Neymar and Messi, the next highest paid behind that, 3.76 million and 3.37 million per month, respectively. But let's talk a little bit about Mbappe then. Frank Leboeuf, your thoughts on what we're seeing here?
Well, I'm very surprised, you know, and it's sad for me to see in, especially right now in France, with all the strike we see for people, you know, starving and not getting what they want in terms of wages, putting in the front page the salary of the player being the most paid or the sport guy being the most paid in the world. And he's French, it's first time it happens. Yeah, it's a lot of money. But he never attacked a bank, he never attacked the club or the chairman in order to give him that money. He's been offered that money. But in France, it doesn't work that way. We're not like in America where everybody can be proud of what they earn. In France, it's a shame. You have to be shameful to earn lots of money like that because for some people in France, you are stealing that money. So I don't think it's a very good opportunity for L'Équipe to put that in front page and to put that for some people to commend that. I'm happy for Kylian. I don't care what he earns. I don't care who gave him the money. I'm happy for him. And if people think that he deserves it, fine by me. You know, he's one of the most attractive players. It doesn't worth that money. Nobody worth that kind of money. But that's what people are giving him. And I'm happy for him.
Look, Kylian Mbappe is going to make money. So be it. Lionel Messi and Neymar, they're going to make money, so be it. Obviously, I don't think that Kylian Mbappe is twice the player that Lionel Messi is, but we can have that conversation some other time, I suppose. Juan Bernat is making 730,000 euros a month? Nordin Mukiele is making 700,000 euros a month? They're throwing money away at PSG. Now, you can give money to Mbappe, you can give money to Neymar if you so desire, and then Messi. These are players that have achieved so many things on the game already. But whoever is making these financial decisions and for PSG on the back end of this roster, they honestly have to get a calculator out and figure out their life and their and their financial accounting, right? Because these people... It doesn't make any sense. Honestly, how can you justify the salaries? And I'm talking about in comparison to the rest of the players in PSG and comparison to the rest of the players in Ligue 1. How are these players at the bottom of that list, at the bottom of that list, still the top of Ligue 1 in terms of payments, how do you justify Mukiele getting paid that money, Bernat getting paid that money? You talk about how a team becomes a team. You think Juan Bernat truly cares whether they win or they lose? He's living large on that money. He is. And he's not under pressure to perform. Nobody sits on any show like this or goes on French television or goes on French newspaper and says, you know why PSG didn't win? Because Juan Bernat did not play well. Nobody cares about Juan Bernat. And yet, he is one of the highest earners, not only in Ligue 1, but apparently at PSG as well.
But they're going to take what they can get right now. Their agents are going to make sure they can while the club's playing it, Shaka.
Absolutely. I don't fault, to echo what Frank was saying, you can't fault any of the players.
No, I don't either, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. If the club are willing to pay me this, then yeah, I'm willing to get paid that. I'll step right to the front of that queue. But to Frank's point, the reason that L'Équipe makes this a news story is to sell newspapers. No, it's not helpful to society. It's not helpful for how people discuss athletes and their earnings. Their only interest is to sell newspapers. And so, therefore, they brandish it across the front page. That moves units for them. And that's a sad testament, just on the back of what we were discussing about social media, that's a sad testament to how sport and people earning in the sport are viewed. Somebody's making that money from somewhere. I think the athletes, as the assets of the game, are entitled to whatever it is you're willing to pay.
Are you ready to see the highest paid managers in world football? Because that was also released by L'Équipe. Diego Simeone is top of the list, 34 million euros a year, three times as much as Carlo Ancelotti at Real Madrid, 12 million more than second place on the list, Pep Guardiola, and twice as much as the third highest paid, Jurgen Klopp. Graham Potter in fourth, earning more than the likes of Ancelotti, Allegri, Tuchel, and Mourinho. Frank, Diego Simeone, top of that list and by quite some way as well.
Well, that's crazy, but that's not only him. I mean, I made the wrong choice, you know, when I gave up my career. I said, I don't want to be a coach because, you know, I want to get a little bit out of football, you know, and not be under the pressure. But if I knew that one day coaches would be paid more than players, maybe I would have tried, you know. I would have tried to get my degrees and try to get a kind of a million, just a million bucks, you know, a month, like Potter and some others. But that's crazy. That word is crazy. But again, if there are some people ready to pay that amount of money to Simeone, good for Simeone. The guy is clever. It's what I said about football players. We say football players or coaches in football, the world of football. People are stupid. They're not that stupid. They pick the right sport. You know, the sport when you are famous and you get the money. That's what it is in that world. And some people are so in love with the football that are ready to spray it and give lots of money to certain people. I'm happy for them. Happy for Diego Simeone.
So you're not earning 34 million? You're not earning 34 million a year for ESPN FC, Frank?
What? We're giving away
a bit
that
less. Just a bit less. Just a bit
32.
Less. Because, you know,
32.
Shaka and Ali got everything, you know, before me. So it's fine.
I'm sorry, who?
While we're on the subject of lists, let's continue with another list that's over on our website right now. It is Tor Christian Carlson, who's compiled the top 39 under 21 players over at ESPN.com. You'll see many of our pundits and journalists as well talking about these players over on our YouTube page. This is the top five and the order. Jude Bellingham in at one, followed by Pedri, Bukayo Saka, Jamal Musiala, and then Gavi. Ale, do you agree with the order of this top five here?
Yeah, I don't mind it. You know my close bonds and love for Pedri. But until Pedri proves that he can stay healthy and play out a season and show how he can impact Barcelona in the attacking half consistently, not just for periods of time, but consistently, injuries are part of the game. We can all appreciate and understand that. But being on the field is also part of being a great player. And Pedri, as good as he has been for Barcelona, there's also no question in the fact that he has had injury issues. And so for that reason and that reason alone, I'm putting Jude Bellingham just above him. if you're building a team right now, and I'm sure that there are many people that would have different opinions, but if you're trying to build a team and you're starting with a midfielder, you start with Jude Bellingham. For the next decade or so, he is going to lead your team. And right now, I think he's taking that step above Pedri. Now, that doesn't mean that Pedri's not coming back. But right now, I'm taking Bellingham over Pedri.
Very disowning Pedri. Can I just say to in Tor's article, one of the first questions he answers, he says people always ask him, why 39? And he just said, because it works. And I thought, that's an excuse I can use. You just wait 1 minute.
Hey,
don't be using that on the power
rankings. You just wait, Cape. I didn't realize I could just throw that out.
Okay, do it. Let's see what happens.
Surprised he didn't say that it was an algorithm.
Yes.
Head on over to the Gavin Jules podcast for more about this list. It's actually with Mark Ogden this week. I'd say Jules is on vacation.
Lively.
But let's call it a family trip, shall we? Because he was away with the kids. Heard him talking about it on another
day. Let's have a vacation.
Come on. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Let me tell you this, the Bundesliga returns with a bang this weekend. Not only is it the biggest game in Germany, Der Klassiker, Bayern against Dortmund, the top two teams, as you can see in the table, with just a point separating them, Thomas Tuchel is Bayern's new manager. And in just... now, in case you forgot what happened the last time these two sides faced one another in the Bundesliga, let's give you a little reminder.
The fixture that has become synonymous with the upper end of German football. Borussia Dortmund and Bayern München thrust together. Musiala, here's Goretzka! Perfectly done! Leon Goretzka gives Bayern the lead in Der Klassiker. Sané, and it was hit with ferocity, it's gone in! Second goal for Bayern! It's a colossal assignment for the Schwarz-Gelben. Now, on the front foot, here's Anthony Modest. To swivel and turn, and is this the moment? It certainly is!
Game on now.
Now, Adeyemi, that was impressive. As he looks over his shoulder, who wants it? Oh, it's Modest! And he's flossed his lines! What a huge moment for Anthony Modest. Coman deciding that he had to foul him, and it is a second bookable offence, so off goes Kingsley Coman.
This is madness.
Schlotterbeck, over it comes, and Modest is there for Dortmund! Aye, aye, aye! Absolute bedlam! And there is drama for you!
Well, 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 Dortmund coming from two goals down to earn a point last time out. What happens this time around? It all gets underway on Saturday, and you can see the 12 p.m. Eastern start there. Mm. There's actually bonus coverage.
Oh, hello.
From 11:30 Eastern on ESPN Plus. It's ABC from noon, though. Regular
Super.
Building show there with Ali Moreno and myself in studio. Bastian Schweinsteiger, Arne Friedrich, and Archie Rintoul will be pitch side, and Derek Ray and Stuart Robson will be on commentary.
You want to get involved beyond this? You can guess the score. Tweet us your final score prediction at ESPN Plus for your chance to win a prize package, including jerseys, a Gio Reyna-signed Dortmund jersey, a full squad-signed Bayern shirt, and also this season's ball, and many more things. Make sure to get involved with the hashtag sweepstakes on ESPN Plus's Twitter page. We've all been asked for our predictions for Der Klassiker. We've all sent them in, and this is what we've got.
Ah, see, hey, Kay, you know what? I know you don't believe this is going to be a draw, but because we're covering the game, you want to keep it neutral, playing a political game. Come on, Kay. I see right through you.
Ali knows me too well, but I'm not saying which way I think it is going to go, okay? But I do hope...
But you just said this. You just said it's not going to go anywhere. What do you mean I'm going to say?
If it's 2-2 again, I'll claim it, though, if you don't mind. We'll be on
you
tomorrow.
You just claim everything.
With all the build-up to that. And let's see if I change my mind on my prediction.
Wow. So political, Kay.
Oh, goodness me.
Second leg of the Copa Classico on ESPN Plus also is something that we're going to be talking about very soon, because that is on the way on Wednesday. Barcelona with the 1-0 advantage heading into the final meeting of the season between the two. Coverage will begin at 2 Eastern. All the build up to that game exclusively on ESPN Plus. So while we are talking Spanish football, front page of Marca, Ancelotti, a year in three games, those three games being that Copa Semi Clásico and the two Champions League meetings with Chelsea in the quarterfinals. Let's welcome in Gustavo Hoffman now, who covers La Liga for ESPN Brazil. Ancelotti talk. Welcome in, Gustavo. So great to have you back with us. It does seem to be inevitable that Carlo Ancelotti is leaving Real Madrid at the end of the season. Why exactly?
Hello, Kayo. Nice to meet you again. It's a pleasure to be here once again. Well, CBF, the Brazilian Federation of Football, wants Carlo Ancelotti. Everybody knows that. He's the first option. He's the first name in the list. He's the main target of CBF. But what we know here is that the decision is not up until CBF, because Carlo Ancelotti, in every press conference where he is, he always says that he wants to remain in Real Madrid till the end of his contract. He has one more year in his contract. So Carlo Ancelotti, in every press conference, always says that he wants to continue here in Madrid with Real Madrid. But what we know also here in Madrid is that if Real Madrid doesn't win the Champions League, only that, if Madrid doesn't win the Champions League, probably Carlo Ancelotti will leave. But if Madrid wins once again the Champions League, and no one can doubt about Madrid, there is a big possibility that Carlo Ancelotti remains in his spot in Madrid. So CBF wants Carlo Ancelotti. The Brazilian Federation wants Carlo Ancelotti. He's the main target. He's the first name in the list. But Carlo Ancelotti wants to remain here because he has one more year in his contract. If he leaves here, this will be a natural move. If he leaves Madrid, go to Brazil and train the Brazilian national team, it will be a natural move for the Italian coach. But now we have to wait. We have to wait for these games, especially for the match against Chelsea, because the title in the Copa del Rey won't change anything for Madrid. Champions League, yes, it can really decide the future of the team and also the coach of Madrid and the Brazilian team.
I know we know Real Madrid's history with this, Ale Moreno, but if Carlo Ancelotti is to not win the Champions League here, does it make sense to you that they would get rid of him?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's getting rid of him. I think Carlo Ancelotti knows full well what the landscape is at Real Madrid. And he knows that this is a club in which you either have to win La Liga or you have to win Champions League, one of the two. And if you're not doing either one of those, Copa del Rey, as Gustavo just mentioned, is simply not enough. When you sign up to Real Madrid, these are the expectations. And so I don't think Carlo Ancelotti was naive or thought that it would be any different. In fact, I think his second time around at Real Madrid, he looked at it as, I'm already winning. Just being here This is already winning. And having done what they were able to do last season in Champions League and going in that magical run that needed so much help from other people, but also needed that magic from Real Madrid that we've come to expect, I think that may have been sort of the crowning achievement, if you will, with Real Madrid. And whatever happened this season would have been a bonus. And what we have seen is that's the way that Real Madrid have played. In La Liga, disinterested at times. And in Champions League, similar to last season. They're looking for yet another magical run. If they put it together, he sticks around. If they don't, he'll be more than happy to pack his bags and go to Brazil. It's not as if he's going to struggle. If Carlo Ancelotti wants to work, he's going to find options out there and some of the best options available. And what better option than to be essentially a part-time manager, which that is what you are as a national team. As a national team coach, you're a part-time manager. You go and evaluate players and you go here and there and everywhere, but you're not working all the time. So it would be perfect for Carlo Ancelotti. As he's looking into retirement, this is his way of easing the day-to-day activities into the Brazilian national team, winning something significant with the Brazilian national team, and off he goes. Carlo Ancelotti is not stressed about this. I'm going to tell you that much.
Well, let's have a look at who might come in if he is to leave Real Madrid. These are who the bookies are going with when it comes to managers' names, the likes of Pochettino, Raul, Nagelsmann getting thrown in there. Zinedine Zidane to come back. Jose Mourinho to come back. Guti. Jurgen Klopp, many a name there. Obviously, Antonio Conte. Who do you think, Gustavo, will be the next manager of Real Madrid?
Well, here in Madrid, many, many people want Raul Gonzalez, who's the coach now in Real Madrid Castilla. Xabi Alonso is also a name that many people here talk about it because he's Spanish, he has some history with the club. But of course, that these two names don't have the aren't so international as Mourinho, as Tuchel. Tuchel now is in Bayern, but Nagelsmann a little bit more because he was in Bayern for some time. But I think that we're gonna have a Spanish coach here, maybe Xabi Alonso. My bet would be Xabi Alonso if Carlo Ancelotti really leaves after this season.
Okay, Xabi Alonso. But
can we give a shout out to the Buffalo Bills helmet in the background of Gustavo's shot?
Hey. Let me stick with you when we talk about. Let's go back to Carlo Ancelotti then, Buffalo Bills fan. If Ancelotti's to go to Brazil, do you think it's going to happen, first of all, is what I want to ask you. But if he's to go there, how's it going to be received? Are they going to be happy about this, a non-Brazilian manager for the Brazilian national team?
Yeah, this is gonna be a very strange situation for Brazil. But nowadays in Brazil, some time ago, people wouldn't like this idea. But now we don't have a unanimous head coach in Brazil, a Brazilian head coach, as it was with Tite in 2016. Nowadays, we don't have an unanimous Brazilian head coach. Some people in CBF talk about Fernando Diniz, who is a young coach in Brazil who likes the old style Brazilian game. He's very known, and people like him in Brazil because of that. Because he has no title, he's not so famous. Some people also talk about Abel Ferreira, who's the Portuguese coach of Palmeiras. But now people really want a foreign coach because we don't have this unanimous head coach, Brazilian head coach in Brazil. And Ancelotti is a name that everyone in Brazil likes. Some days ago, the president of CBF, Edinaldo Rodrigues, in an interview, he said that everywhere he goes in Brazil, the fans always say, we want Ancelotti. So that's crazy because the people in Brazil really want Carlo Ancelotti with the Brazilian national team. Also because he has a very good relationship with the Brazilian players. So we always hear, and I talk to the players here in Madrid, Vinicius, Militão, Rodrigo, when Casemiro was here also, they're always talking so good about Carlo Ancelotti. And also two Brazilian legends talk so good about Carlo Ancelotti. Ronaldo, Ronaldo Fenomeno, who now is the president of Valladolid, but is also a very key part of this whole story because he's very close to Florentino Pérez. And also Roberto Carlos, the left fullback of Brazil, one of the Brazilian legends, who works for the club, who works for Real Madrid. He's one of the ambassadors of Real Madrid. So the Brazilian Federation has some contacts inside Real Madrid to make the things easy.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. Thanks so much for being with us, Gustavo. We'll no doubt catch up with you again very soon. Lots of La Liga to enjoy this weekend on ESPN Plus, and probably some talking in the boardroom at Real Madrid and Real Valladolid between the presidents there and maybe the manager and Ronaldo too. But a lot of games to look out for. Also, Villarreal against Real Sociedad and Atleti against Real Betis.
I'm calling that game Real Madrid-Valladolid, by the way, Keith.
Even more reason to watch that game.
Well,
even
some would feel otherwise, but it's all right.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spanish media are not too impressed with Spain's loss in Scotland on Tuesday. Diario AS going with Glasgow collapse. Marca, a little more pointed with their front page. What is the plan?
Oh.
Here's what Joselu said after the game. He said, we can play in different ways. Yesterday, for example, Scotland changed their system. We thought they would play four at the back, but they played three central defenders. Now, this has been picked up by the Spanish media because it turns out Scotland do normally play with a back three. In fact, in their last 23 games, Scotland used a back four in just three of them. So, Ale, how bad does this make Luis de la Fuente look?
Bad. Bad. Because part of what you and your staff have to do in preparing for a game is devising a plan for your team to be successful against a certain formation, and specific formation that another team usually puts out on the field. And so you're going to make choices based upon whatever is it that you think the other team is going to do. And right now, Spain is not a dominant team as it is. So it's not, we're not going back to 2010 where everybody had to adjust and accommodate so that they could play against Spain. Spain simply showed up. We're going to possess the ball. We're going to kill you with possession. We have enough quality through the midfield, enough quality in the attacking half. We're going to create chances so we don't change for anybody. Now, this version of Spain actually does have to make adjustment, does have to find different personalities and different players so that they can match up with other teams favorably because they don't quite have the quality that they once did. This is part of the issue. So when I say that, it highlights how important it is for you to actually be prepared to play against a certain team and against a certain formation. When you don't do that, it tells me and it tells everybody who's paying attention is, what were you doing then? Because you're a national team coach. You're preparing for two games. So you're not preparing for Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. No, no. You've been preparing for two games for the last how many months since the World Cup. You have been doing your homework for these matches, and yet you couldn't get it right. It says a lot about the staff and the coach and the coach himself in not being able to figure out this, make the decisions accordingly, and put the players out on the field that would make this team successful. It's not a good look for anybody involved with this group.
Yeah, maybe as well the player
perhaps said a little bit too much there about the game plan?
Well, if that's a game plan you're given and then all of a sudden you show up on the field, that's not Jose's responsibility to know how Scotland are going to line up.
But then to say it afterwards in the...
Well, he's just being far too honest. I mean, for us, great, you know, but if you're involved with the Spanish setup and this catastrophe, then maybe you question that. But regardless of what he says after the fact, losing to Scotland as you did, looking as poor as you did, said all that was needed to be said.
And to be honest, I would also say, regardless of what the formation was out on the field, because as a player, with your experience, if you're a national team player, you should have the experience to start adjusting to certain things and how we shift around, how we move around, how do we address what's in front of us. But that wasn't why Spain lost to Scotland. They lost to Scotland because they didn't compete in the same manner in which Scotland did. When there was a 50-50 challenge, Scotland won those challenges. When there was an opportunity to tackle somebody, Scotland was doing the tackling. They were aggressive. They had the urgency. They had the intensity. Spain did not. They thought that they could just pass the ball around at Hampden Park, and Scotland said, no, that's not going to happen here. We're going to kick you around. We're going to move you. We're going to push you. We're going to get in your face, and this is how we compete. If we're Scotland, this is how we compete. The fact that Spain were surprised that that was happening, and then it became a story as to, well, the grass was too long. Grass was too long, so that's why we couldn't move the ball around. That is what I think is a sense of weakness there from Spain, that they were not able to match the physicality of Scotland, the intensity and the energy and the urgency, and then they look for excuses. That looks even worse.
Frank Leboeuf is still with us. I suppose there's been a few lessons learned in this whole fiasco, Frank.
Oh, yes. First, you know, be more professional. Be ready to fight against a team that you maybe so-called a lesser good team comparing to you. So next time, you know, consider the team you're going to play against and maybe fight the amount of with the amount of strength that you need to in order to win. That's what was lacking the most. I think it's an excuse to say we play four at the back or three at the back. Yes, maybe De La Fuente didn't do his homeworks, but most of the players are experienced enough to adapt to the situation and change, you know, in the middle of the park, you know, how they have to play. But the mind and the frame of mind you're in is hard to change while you play. It's you're in it and you're going to be stuck in it. And it's why it was lacking for Spain being ready to fight against a very courageous Scottish team. And that's what they have to change. Yes, you are talented. Yes, you are more experienced. Yeah, maybe you are more successful. But if you don't have the spirit, you're going to lose the games.
We need to get to the real talk now, though. Where does Scotland feature in Xhaka's power?
Oh, well, very prominently, I'll have you know. Because Scotland are number five. Argentina World Cup winners. Right, they only played friendlies, but...
Looking at Frank saying, well done. Clearly, because France is there.
Right? Well, you can't beat one and two. Belgium surprised me how good they were over the week. Morocco beat Brazil in a friendly, so they get some love.
Do you know that Argentina play Panama and Curaçao?
Yes,
right?
They're the World Cup winners. Okay. They're still celebrating. Right. I'm joining them in that celebration.
Yes, you are.
Scotland better than England.
What?
Yeah. Have some of that. I'm not sure how many times you'll say that sentence, but there you go.
Gustavo left because Brazil aren't on your power rankings tonight, and I think it was leaked some information to him.
Well, you can't go losing to Morocco and getting... This is a very difficult list to get in 2K.
So difficult that you were having difficulties putting it together when we came to work today.
That's a lot of data.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Why is it 10 teams and not 9?
Because it just seemed to work that way. I thought it just works. Let me tell you, that's the best excuse I have
Xhaka,
ever read
you
in
know
my
what?
Life.
Xhaka, I love you. You know, you put my almighty Canada in a tenth seat. I'm happy. You know, my favorite for the World Cup, the former World Cup. They're there. They come back to their best. I'm happy. Thank you, Xhaka.
You're welcome, Frank.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
Did you know that Venezuela beat Saudi Arabia, which Saudi Arabia beat Argentina in the World Cup? So therefore, you see where I'm going with this?
Yes, I did. Yes. And Venezuela 11th.
Oh.
But I go with 10 because just works. Just works.
Actually, then Venezuela tied Uzbekistan, so there you go.
All right, well, there you go. So now they're down to 44. Now they're at 44.
Well, you can't argue with the science, remember.
Well, you can.
That's very true.
You can argue with the science.
Make sure to check out the latest edition of Extra Time over on YouTube, because Frank, Ale and Chaka will be answering your questions.
Trust the process.
Trust it.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The Women's Champions League semi-finals are set. It is Arsenal taking on Wolfsburg. And after a dramatic win over eight-time title holders Lyon, Chelsea will be facing Barcelona. And that's it for the latest edition of the show. But don't worry, we're not going anywhere just yet.
Okay?
Was that a yawn that you tried to hide?
No, it's exhausted.
We've got extra time coming up where these guys will be answering your questions.
Paul Rackens was tough.
What?
Paul Rackens.
The algorithm.
Took it out to me.
The algorithm was overworked.
Oh, hey, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Ale, can we try
that?
Oh,
we need
the
questions?
We do.
So you need my pace?
We do need your pace.
Change your pace, baby.
It's a big weekend for Ale Moreno ahead as
well. Yeah, it is.
This reminds me, what was your speed rate?
That's not his range. He's too far away. That's not his range. He cannot run like that.
Ali had a speed rating in FIFA of what was it? Like 24?
Not quite that low, Shaq, but thank you. My game was more about craftiness. Intelligence.
Hold on, speaking of crafty, right? What about Key? The classical prediction.
Yeah.
I think one of these teams is going to win, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
Yeah, so.
But on the full screen, I have it as a draw.
Yes, on the record as a draw.
Every single thing just covered right there.
Political.
Oh, God.
Who had the same prediction as me?
Well, I did, because I think it's going to be a draw. And so I picked a draw.
That's right. That's
but
right.
You said, I know one of these teams is going to win, but I'm not going to tell you which one. But I'm going to pick a draw for you.
See, what I'm saying is that if Kay or Dan choose to participate in the...
I don't choose, I get asked.
Well, in the prediction department, then actually give a prediction that you truly believe, not one that is going to be political.
No. For the second time today, I'm going to say, I didn't know that was an option. I could just...
Listen, I ask the questions, you guys give the answers.
Well, I'm sorry.
When I ask the questions, I need to be diplomatic, okay?
Either somebody's going to win or there's going to be a draw. I never knew that was an option I could pick. I never knew.
First question. Do you think Nagelsmann can get Spurs to do a 360 if he joins the club? I'll ask you that then, Chaka.
I think.
So they're just going to go back to being Spurs.
But whether we're talking to Craig 360 or everybody else 360, if we're talking to Craig 360, I think Nagelsmann is a very good fit for Spurs. Listen, I understand that this is anything but a foregone conclusion. I think there'll be other clubs interested in Nagelsmann. So him going to Spurs is not taken for granted by any measure. But I think it's a good fit. If you're Spurs and you get him in, he can get you to do a Craig 360.
A Craig 360.
Which is better than your normal 360.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's different.
Okay.
We'll go with different.
But we all stayed quiet on that one.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that on the show when it got brought up, Shaka was like, well, I didn't really want to say it.
Yeah, he was so confident. He was so confident with it.
Yeah, I'm not getting involved there. I'll leave it to you. We just got a little insight to this, but to LA, how did you get Matt Sharp for international games that were outside of MLS's season?
What insight we got to this?
A little bit of a...
No. You can't call that any kind of an insight.
Chat.
Always prepared, ready.
Did you
to
not
go?
See the change of pace?
Help out his teammate.
Huh? And I had to avoid the camera and the TV. Huh? Come on, Shaq. Well, actually, those of us that were not in the middle of our season we would go early to Venezuela and have basically, whether it's a fitness camp or just a camp in general, and usually there would be quite a few of us there, and they would, the local players would join the camp, and then we would also have the either the U20s or the U23s participate as well. So it would make for intense training sessions. So you much rather be in season than do what we were doing, because then it became sort of a free-for-all in that we're doing two-a-days and this sort of stuff, because there was nothing else to do. If you're going to be here, it's here to work. And so it would be a two-week period, three-week period of intense work.
Frank, as an actor, which member of the ESPN FC crew do you think has potential to become a good actor?
Oh, hello.
Good look at this. This is my thinking man here.
You know what? To play the handsome guy, I will go for Luis Garcia. I think he has that smile, you know, where you can be very much appreciated by...
What are you saying about these two?
I just struck a couple of poses there.
So, what I heard there is that you're ugly and I'm very ugly.
If we
I didn't say that. No. I talked about Luis, I didn't talk about you. You know, with the picture we had before on the wall, for sure, and I said that before, Shaka can play James Bond, you know, with the suit that we had before, you know. Ali, I see Ali, you know that, as a cop. I see the guy, you know, trying to find something, and the guy, you know, very strong. And then, oh yes, I see you as a cop, you know. I would love to see you that.
An angry cop.
Good cop. Yeah, you know, the guy, lonely, but sure about himself, you know, knows what he do.
Yes.
And does
Bruce
and
Willis
what he does.
Type.
And
Bruce Willis.
Kind of.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Hello, nothing gets past him,
dark.
Right?
Hey, dark.
Yes. Yeah, dark. Yeah. That's it. Die Hard. I could have been in Die Hard, Shaq.
Okay.
John McClane.
All right.
No?
I'm not sure what's going on.
You need a good-looking actor, Luis Garcia, if not these two.
Okay, you just realize the amount of crap you have to say to make those two people very happy, you know, right now?
You call it crap, I call it something else, but we won't say that. All right, is Enzo Fernandez...
Hold on, 1 second, before we move to the next question. You know, a couple of days ago... Frank was mentioning that he went to some sort of documentary about bald people, and he was talking about how people were hanging on and not being willing to let go and stuff. I thought, is Frank talking to me? Is he? it felt like he was talking to me, but was he not?
If the cap fits, Ali, if the cap fits.
I'm the first one to say that the hair is gone.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I'm not
the
hanging
bald
on.
Cap fits.
Yeah, well, it does fit very well. it fits pretty snug.
Can I enter this?
Well, Ali, if you want to keep on fighting with it, you know, that's your own destiny. So whatever you want to do.
I was watching daytime TV the other day while I got my nails done in the nail salon.
Okay.
And they said there are new trends in the dating world.
Okay.
And bald guys are trending right now.
Shave it! Shave it, Ali! Shave it!
I'm married. I'm not dating. I'm out of the dating world.
They're all married.
My first question is trending where?
It was American daytime.
We need context. Trending with who?
In the hair salon. In the nail salon.
We're very popular in the nail salon.
Right. Okay.
The nail salon.
Okay, next question. Is Enzo Fernandez the best player of all time? Yes or yes? They actually say that in Spanish, don't they? Sí o sí.
Oh, goodness.
Well, the Twitter handle would suggest that this is an Enzo fan. So yes, I guess.
No, that's Enzo Fernandez asking question to himself.
But the first yes or the second yes?
That's what
yes.
I like.
Which yes are you going with?
I'm pretty sure it's the second yes.
I'm a second yes guy.
The second
right,
yes.
Second.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we agree? Can we agree to disagree? I go for the first yes.
For sure.
But whichever way you look at it, the answer is yes. Yeah.
This will even be... Kay
oh, yeah.
would say that it's yes.
Well, I'd say yes or yes.
Even that, I'm not sure.
I'm enjoying this
maybe
fence
or maybe.
That I'm sat upon. This will be the third time asking this, so hopefully third time is a charm. Frank, start, bench and drop these legendary strikers, Andy Cole, Ian Wright and Les Ferdinand.
Is Frank asleep?
Let's keep it that way. Andy Cole, you say Ian Wright, second?
Yeah. Or Les.
Ah, my God. I'm sorry for Les, but I will put Les third. How do you say sell? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
or bench,
sell.
Or whatever
yeah.
It is. Sell, sell. Yeah, Les Ferdinand, sell. I think Andy Cole was more productive, but I love the game of Ian Wright. So, am I allowed to put Ian Wright to start, bench Andy Cole, and unfortunately sell Les Ferdinand that I love too?
You can do what you like, but you've just sold Sir Les. Would you care to wade in on this one?
I wouldn't care, no.
Oh, really? You didn't change
that's it?
On that fence.
That's how you're going to do things from,
yes.
Now, from here on out?
Yes, I've realized that there are a lot of options available to
again.
Me. This is one. Key asked me if I'd care to contribute, and I said no, I would not.
Would you care to contribute, Moreno?
Sure, why not, given that Shaq decided to take the day off. That's not a shot, by the way. I'm going to say Andy Cole, start, bench, Ian Wright, sell Les Ferdinand.
All right. Question to Frank. Why are modern-day footballers becoming more and more bad at set pieces? Your generation's players were freaks at free kicks.
I think we had a kind of percentage of... told by the coaches that 65% of the goals were scored from set pieces, so we worked on that, I guess. To have an explanation is hard, but I think according to the country you were playing in, you know, you had some types of football that you wanted to sign, I would say, and make sure that it worked that way. So you were playing in England, you were playing against a French team, you would have worked on the corner kicks and make sure that you can score because you were more into it, let's say. But to have to explain why generation time, you know, it changes, I don't have any explanation really. I think we were very focused on set pieces because we knew that we could make a difference. At that time.
Was it the same for the goalkeepers back then, Shaka, that they'd be making you look at all the free kick takers back then?
Yeah, but to the question, obviously I have no idea about this, but are there really less free kicks being scored now?
This is obviously someone's opinion.
So
maybe there's some data.
But you know, I only deal with data, okay? I'm data-driven kind of guy. I'm unless I can see that there's a significant drop-off, then I don't see how this is relevant.
So you'll give your opinion based on the report that will be filed?
Yes, I need the data. Okay. I need the data. No, to the point, I mean, listen, I get it. You had players like
players that were known.
You had players like Zola, like David Beckham, who were known for set pieces. But nowadays you have James Ward-Prowse, who's known for set pieces in much the same way.
Good Lord, that was a drop off.
I know. I'm just saying, but I'm not sure that there is that significant drop-off in how many set pieces are scored today as compared to previously. It's just some we just kind of remembered.
Or maybe it's that it was bigger names that were known for it before than it is.
There you go. That's where I was getting.
Can that be included in the algorithm or not?
I can make many adjustments to accommodate data as you present.
You do not want to push the algorithm to the limit.
No, the algorithm is
fine. It'll break.
Algorithm is
it's barely going now.
It's flexible.
Well, it predicted a 2-2 draw for Der Klassiker.
Yes.
The algorithm, yes, and so did I, so I'm sticking. Thank you so much for sending in your questions.
What didn't you predict for Der Klassiker?
For the later.
Everybody wins.
Tomorrow we'll talk
juice
more
boxes,
about Der Klassiker.
Orange slices.
And many other things. See you tomorrow. Wins.
Nobody loses.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.